Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, we're going to learn about antioxidants and lung cancer, a study from the University of Montreal. And doctors find a patient's brain activity continues for 10 minutes after death. Wow. What does that mean? University of Western Ontario, and I'll explain that. And the sunshine vitamin is linked to fewer heart events. This is based upon a Penn State University looking at meta analysis, meaning many different studies. So that vitamin D is important. And tackling depression by changing the way you think. Norwegian University for Science and Technology. Also, depression level unemployment in the United States. I'm going to take on some of the cheerleaders who are out there telling us how good everything is. It isn't. And from Chris Hedges, from TruthDig, The Dance of Death, a commentary. I'll have my own commentary as well on a similar issue. Also today, we're going to take a look at the amount of infrastructure change that we need in order to bring our nation up to a standard and quality of life that we should have, and what that will actually cost, and some ways we could pay for it. From our audio files today, we're going to hear from a Canadian journalist who was challenged by a media person about everyone's perception of what is going on in Syria. She was there. He was not. She was in the war zone. None of the reporters were. She saw firsthand on multiple trips there. The others had never been there. So why should we be believing the media and not a person who is a journalist who was there to tell us the truth? Also, I mentioned last week, I played a little clip about how bad it was to be unemployed in one small Calhoun County, that's the bottom of West Virginia, my home state. And today we're going to add something to it. Do you know how many painkillers were shipped to just one tiny town? 9 million. I'm talking about a tiny town, one you could walk through in about 3 minutes. Well, who was taking all those painkillers? Down in Kermit, West Virginia, a town of just 400 people. You'll hear that story. Also, I want to give you more on WikiLeaks' release of Vault 7. These are the CIA exposures, because this will lead up to tomorrow's Progressive Commentary Hour, where I'm going to have a top CIA analyst, someone who worked in the field, who was in special operations, covert operations. And he's going to talk about the truth about the CIA as part of the hidden hand or the deep state. That'll be on tomorrow, but I'll give you an opening to that today. And that's our show. It's going to be a packed show today. So we always begin on a way that we can understand health and nutrition. There is a new article published by the Natural Blaze, a good publication, by the way, by Brandon Turbill. And it talks about Roundup. I'm opposed to Roundup because Roundup, which is made of glyphosate, is an extremely toxic agent. But the argument goes, okay, there are a lot of toxic items out there that we consume, but what if it's such a small amount it really doesn't make a difference? So, according to this article, if the toxic herbicide glyphosate had not provided enough reasons to justify a ban, this new report, published in Scientific Reports, might help. The study has revealed that Roundup, the very Roundup you see being advertised where people go out, all those nasty little encroachments in your sidewalk or in your backyard, want to get rid of those weeds, you spray Roundup on it, kills it right away. Well, the main ingredient is glyphosate, and it has the potential to cause non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. The study involved a test in the laboratory that showed that even at extremely low levels of exposure, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease was produced. And that was a peer-reviewed study that showed that Roundup caused the non-alcoholic fatty liver disease at a very small concentration. So how many of us are actually exposed to this? A lot. Most Americans consume something that has been sprayed with Roundup, and we shouldn't use it ever, period. Now, once a year, the Environmental Working Group releases its report on the Dirty Dozen. These are the vegetables and fruits that are so heavily sprayed that they suggest you avoid them unless you can buy them organically. And so, which are the worst of the worst? Well, strawberries, spinach, peaches, nectarines, cherries, apples, those are bad unless you can get them with no sprays. And also, by contrast, the cleanest foods that you can get, and they don't have to be organic, but these would include sweet corn, avocados, pineapples, cabbage, onions, sweet peas, papayas, asparagus, mangoes, eggplant, honeydew melons, kiwis, cantaloupe, cauliflower, grapefruits. So there's relatively few pesticides detected on these foods. It's very easy to wash it off. Most of these have thick skins, and you're not going to eat the skin in any case, because not everybody can afford organic. But there is one way that you can generally get organic inexpensively. If you have a farmer's market near you, and most Americans do because they're so popular, they generally open up at around 8 o'clock in the morning, some at 9, and they stay open anywhere from 11:30 to 12, some as late as 1 o'clock. Find out the time they close. Go there a half hour before they close when they're beginning to stop for the day. Now, they cannot take that produce back and sell it anywhere. It has the field heat in it. What do I mean? It means when they harvested, probably that night before, they did not have any way of taking the heat that was in the soil and in the plant out. If they had just dipped it in ice water and then spun it and put it in a refrigerator, it'll last 2 weeks. Taking it directly out of the soil, it'll last about, 3 or 4 hours, and then it starts to wilt. So unless they donate it someplace, they're just going to take it and throw it away. That's when you go to the farmer's market, and you go over, and the mushrooms, everything else. Now, there are a couple things that they can resell the next week, like onions and garlic, and the gourds and tubers, those that have thick skins, potatoes. But all your greens and all your fruits, they can't. Well, apples they could. But everything else they're going to have to get rid of, in which case you just say, here's what I'd like, what deal can you make me? And they're always going to make you a good deal. That way you're getting something healthy, organic, locally grown, and inexpensive. But the reality is that people are on limited budgets today, and they might want to eat organic. They cannot always afford it, especially if they're not where there's a farmer's market or a food co-op. So what you do is realize there are certain foods, the way they're grown, are not heavily sprayed or even sprayed at all, because they have natural protectants against insects, like the avocado, for example, and pineapples. So that's why you want to get those, and you just simply take some hydrogen peroxide or some apple cider vinegar, a tablespoon, put it into a gallon of water, and then agitate the food in there, rinse it off, and it's good to go. Also, because I'll keep you in the loop on all this, when it comes to antioxidants, these are what trap free radicals. And there are some antioxidants, the superstar antioxidants, there are three. Vitamin C is number one, alpha lipoic acid is number two, vitamin E is number three. And the more times they loop around the body in your blood and come into contact with a free radical, the more those free radicals they can attach to and neutralize. So the more vitamin C you have in your body, taking some when you wake up in the morning with some lemon juice and apple cider vinegar, a teaspoon of each, that's terrific for you. Alkalize the body, helps with digestion, strengthens the bones, and it's one of the best things in the world for your blood. Then taking some beet juice before you go out to work out increases the capacity for working out because you're creating nitric oxide in the body, and that increases the oxygen going into the cells and into the heart, so you get a better workout. Also, you have less likelihood of having a stroke. And then if you take vitamin C after your workout, then vitamin C after lunch, and then late afternoon, after dinner, before you go to bed, 24 hours you're having antioxidant activity. That can trap an awful lot of free radicals. That's just by itself. If you used other ones in combination, even better. And the nice thing about alpha-lipoic acid, it's an antioxidant in the blood, but also in your cell. So it cleans out the cell and helps protect the cell. Here's a study from University of Montreal. It was published in the Frontiers in Oncology, and it reveals an association between increasing the intake of carotenoids and vitamin C and a lower risk of lung cancer. And that's important. They found that those who had, in the top third of participants, 30% lower risk of developing lung cancer just from two antioxidants. Just two. That's terrific. Now, just imagine if you juiced, that lowers your lung cancer risk. If you went to a vegan diet, that really lowers your risk of lung cancer and breast cancer and prostate cancer. And then if you exercised every day, that reduces the risk. And if you also cleaned up your emotions by doing mindful meditation, that reduces the hormones. And by the way, one of the quickest ways in the world you can destroy your immune system, stress. So all that is important to live a longer life, but it's the antioxidants. From the University of Western Ontario, published in the Canadian Journal of Neurological Sciences, a team of doctors documented a case in which a terminal cancer or terminal patient removed from life support continued to experience brainwave activity for approximately 10 minutes after they had pronounced clinical death. Well, that meant that even though the person was not able to communicate, they were still processing information and images. And that's after their heart stopped. So that should lead some credence to the idea that even though we think someone is brain dead and we think that they're deceased, there's still activity going on, which also means that now with the new technologies that can go directly into the brain, they can stimulate all forms of positive healing images and sounds, images of loved ones. For example, they could take a video that a person had of their child growing up and then with their partner and wonderful, happy moments, and they can program that right through into the person's brain who has a coma or is otherwise considered brain dead. Those images create vibrations because the electrical impulse carries the vibration and the message. And hence, even though it's a language that the people who are not in that state don't speak, the brain can process all that. So in effect, the body is immobile, but the brain is not. So, and everything that you say in the room where a person is in a coma, they're hearing. Just remember that. That's why positive input is so important. There's a multi-study review from Penn State University, and they found that higher blood levels of vitamin D are associated with significantly fewer cardiovascular disease events and a lower risk of death from cardiovascular disease. They looked at 180,000 participants, and they looked at their vitamin D level. And they found that if you have a higher vitamin D level in your blood, you have a 12% reduced risk of dying from cardiovascular disease. quote, the present meta-analysis showed that higher vitamin D concentrations had a protective effect on total cardiovascular disease events and cardiovascular disease mortality. That means death. So that's good news. So make sure you're taking 2,000 milligrams a day of your omega or your vitamin D. And then if you take 2,000 milligrams same time of the omega-3 fatty acids, you reduce it even further. And from the Norwegian University of Science and Technology, they talk about tackling depression by changing the way you think. What's that mean? I can tell you from personal experience, since we just completed, in fact, we have out for peer review publication right now. And once it's published, I'll put it up on my website and share it with you as we have all of our articles that get published. And these are all based upon human studies that we do. So we did a study on lifestyle and behavior modification for 3 months, June, July, and August. And it was for depression and anxiety. No medications were given. And what we found was that when we had people thinking positive thoughts and not empowering a depressed thought or an anxious thought, and we showed them how to empower a positive thought and how not to empower a negative thought, and by halfway through each week when, you know, we would do the group, we'd always ask, does anyone have anything they'd like to say that shows how they're progressing? And all these hands would go up. There are 500 people. And some would say, I've been clinically depressed for 27 years. And for the first time in 27 years, I'm feeling happy. And quite frankly, I don't know what to do with that happiness. I've never experienced it like this, not for any sustained period of time. That was common. So here's a study, and here's what they say. Quote, depressed individuals don't need to worry and ruminate. Just realizing this is liberating for a lot of people. So think about that. By not chewing over all of those negative thoughts that you can't do anything about and reliving all those incidences where you should have said A and you said B, you should have done this and you did that, you should have said no and you said yes, you should have said yes and you said no, we can't change the mistakes we make. Think of the people who would be in our lives today that deserve to be, that we said the wrong thing, did the wrong thing, and they're not there. Think of the people that we said the wrong thing and did the wrong thing and allowed people who shouldn't have been in our lives in. Now, how long do you live with that guilt, that shame for making the wrong mistake, the wrong career, the wrong job, the wrong location to live? Think of the wrong diet. Think of the wrong foods we eat. Think of the wrong drugs taken. We have plenty of wrong choices we make in life. Everyone does. But if you beat up on yourself, you learn nothing from it. You just become a self-pitying martyr. And boy, do we have a nation filled with self-pitying martyrs. First, anytime no one can ever acknowledge they made a mistake, they're a martyr. It's always everyone else they don't appreciate. Yeah. So what we teach is don't worry and think about it, because you're worrying and thinking about it is not going to change it. What you want to take its place is where you should put your energy. So put your energy in what you can actually change today, what you can actually create today, what you can actually do positive today. And when you do that, watch how the depression and anxiety lifts. And we had 95% success rate. And finally, I've been telling you all about black cumin seed oil, why it's so important. Well, there's a new study from Tabriz University Medical Sciences, and it says that black seed may treat hypothyroidism, including Hashimoto's disease. That would be good news, because it turns off inflammation everywhere in the body, for the brain, the arthritic flame in your joints, fibromyalgia. It's just terrific. Generally 1 teaspoon in the morning. But if you have a lot of pain, then 2 or 3 teaspoons will work. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. We have a lot of program to go, commentaries and audio clips and insights and how we can better resolve our issues. But I do want to mention, and I haven't mentioned this in a long time, I'm working on some very important projects now. Also finishing not one, not two, but three different documentaries, all of which will be released next year, starting about 6 months from now. Two of the ones that were released now are doing extremely well and getting a lot of attention from activists as tools to help them in making changes. More on these later in the coming months. I'm going to be out of New York for about 3 months, and I'll be out of the country helping a lot of people who really desperately need help, who have nothing. They don't even have food. So I'm working diligently to try to help the children, help the pregnant women who are suffering. And there are other individuals from other countries, mainly Australia, medical doctors who are helping as well. Now, because I'm not back in the city, I'm not able to counsel a lot of people, especially with my schedule. So if you have a non-life-threatening condition and you would like help with your health, your weight, your, you know, just the chronic conditions most people suffer from, I have a person that you can call who can help counsel you for free. And she'll do so at an office in mid-Manhattan. And at least that will help those people who generally pop by the office and I run out and give them some insights and advice. So take down the number, make a call, make an appointment, go in. It's free, doesn't cost you anything, nothing to buy, just insight and advice that can help you. The number is 917-392-2227, 917-392-2227. And the person's name is Celestina. And she has a lot of experience in helping people, and she has a good science and nutrition background as well. But I wouldn't suggest end-stage people. That you need a holistic medical doctor for. We are in the midst of a lot of crisis right now, and I believe that we have to pay careful attention to what's happening to our freedoms and what's behind it and who's responsible. And for a lot of us, all we have to do is look who profits from a particular piece of legislation. What group profits when you bring in a billionaire to run a Department of Education? Clearly, it's not going to be the average kid going to a public-supported school, the type of school you and I probably went to if you grew up in the 1950s and 60s and 70s. So I always ask, where is the motivation for what's being done? For example, where is the motivation for demonizing Iran as if it's this great threat and they're going to have a nuclear bomb and drop it on Israel or the United States? And when I do my homework and do deep homework, I don't find the threat there. In fact, to all the people, these talking heads on television, I see them as the threat because they are the ideologues. Those are the messengers who come forth. And whether they believe in their own misinformation, I cannot ascribe. I don't know what their ultimate motives are. I do know that where the National Security Advisor Flynn had to resign because of some conflict, the real conflict was later that we learned, not at that time, that he had been given $500,000 a year to represent Turkey. Now, what does that mean? It means that Turkey is one of the two most important pro-terrorist theocracies in the world. Now, theocracy is all the rules are based upon a religious ideology. And the most radical ideological forebears are the Wahhabis, a relatively new sect, and it's a cult. And it's supported by the royal family in Saudi Arabia, even though they don't live by it. I can give you my own personal story. Some being in a hotel in London where I was on one, I had one suite and they had another, and what went on in their suite that I could see and hear. They don't live by their own rules, but hypocrisy is nothing new to the Saudis. And a woman has no rights. There's gross violations of human rights, but also they're the primary funders, trainers, enablers of ISIS, al-Nusra, al-Qaeda, all the terrorist groups. They also were behind the funding of the 9/11. That in itself should exclude them from any diplomatic immunity. They should be able to be called out, shown for what they are, a pro-terrorist supporting state. The same is true for Turkey. Erdogan, the head of Turkey, is a tyrant. He's a profiteer. He's completely immoral at every level. And yet we support him, and he supports NATO, and NATO's a criminal organization. Just look at what they did to Gaddafi in Libya. In fact, I posted yesterday some pictures of Libya just prior, weeks before they bombed it, and with their no-fly zone policies. And then look at it today. And yet no one is being held accountable by the media, specifically Clinton and Obama. So here is the man who's going to sit at the right hand of the President of the United States until he had to leave, who had a conflict of interest because he couldn't accept $500,000 to lobby on behalf of Erdogan and Turkey and all that they represent. At the same time, advocating that we should do anything that would interfere in Turkey or Saudi Arabia's actions. So that's the kind of corruption that I see that is occurring every day at every level. Now, to add to this, we have Chris Hedges' insight, which I find very important, and that is that the ruling corporate elites no longer seek to build. What's that mean? It means they seek to destroy. They are agents of death. They crave the unimpeded power to cannibalize the country and pollute and degrade the ecosystem, defeat an insatiable lust for wealth and power and hedonism. Wars and military virtues are celebrated. Intelligence and empathy and the common good are banished. Culture is degraded to patriotic kitsch. Education is designed only to instill technical proficiency to serve the poisonous engine of corporate capitalism. And historical amnesia shuts us off from the past, also the present and the future. Those branded as unproductive or redundant are discarded and left to struggle in poverty or locked away in cages. State repression is indiscriminate and brutal. And presiding over the tawdry grand scheme is a deranged ringmaster tweeting absurdities from the White House. So where's this lead? Just look over your shoulder. The graveyard of world empires, Sumerian, Egyptian, Greek, Roman, Mayan, Khmer, Ottoman, Austro-Hungarian, followed the same trajectory of moral and physical collapse. Those who rule at the end of empire are psychopaths, imbeciles, narcissists, and deviants. The equivalent of depraved Roman Emperor Caligula, or Nero, or Tiberius, or Commodus. The ecosystem that sustains the empire is degraded and exhausted. Economic growth, and concentrated in the hands of corrupt elites, is dependent on a crippling debt peonage imposed on the population. The bloated ruling class of oligarchs and priests and courtiers and mandarins, eunuchs, professional warriors, financial speculators, and corporate managers sucks the marrow out of society. The elite's myopic response to the looming collapse of the world in its natural form and with the civilization is to make subservient populations. Now they are to work harder for less. They will squander capital to prove grandiose projects are right, such as pyramids and palaces and border walls, and fracking, and they wage war. President Trump's decision to increase military spending by $54 billion and take the needed funds out of the flesh of domestic programs typifies the behavior of terminally ill civilizations. And when the Roman Empire fell, it was trying to sustain an army of 500,000 soldiers that had become a parasitic drain on the state and its resources. The complex bureaucratic mechanisms that are created by all civilizations ultimately doom them. The difference now, as Joseph Tainer pointed out in The Collapse of Complex Society, is that collapse, if and when it comes again, will this time be global. No longer can any individual nation collapse. World civilization will disintegrate as a whole. Civilizations in decline, despite the palpable signs of decay around them, remain fixated on restoring their so-called greatness. Their illusions condemn them. They cannot see that the forces that gave rise to the modern civilization, namely technology and industrial violence and fossil fuels, are the same forces that are extinguishing it. Their leaders are trained only to serve the system, slavishly worshiping the old gods long after these gods begin to demand millions of sacrificial victims. The Trump appointees, Stephen Bannon, Jeff Sessions, Rex Tillerson, Steve Mnuchin, Betsy DeVos, Wilbur Ross, Rick Perry, Alex Acosta, and others, do not advocate innovation or reform. They are pavilion dogs salivating before piles of money. They are hardwired to steal from the poor and loot federal budgets. Their single-minded obsession with personal enrichment drives them to dismantle any institution or abolish any law or regulation that gets in the way of their greed. Sigmund Freud wrote that societies, along with individuals, are driven by two primary instincts. One is the instinct for life, eros, the quest to love, nurture, protect, and preserve. The second is the death instinct. The death instinct, called the thanatos by post-Freudians, is driven by fear and hatred and violence. It seeks the dissolution of all living things, including our own beings. One of these two forces, Freud wrote, is always ascendant. Societies in decline enthusiastically embrace the death spiral, as Freud observed, written on the eve of the rise of the European fascism in World War II. Quote, "It is in sadism where the death instincts twist the erotic aim in its own sense and yet at the same time fully satisfies the erotic urge that we succeed in obtaining the clearest insights into the nature and its relation to eros. But even where it emerges without any sexual purpose, in the blindest fury of destructiveness, we cannot fail to recognize that the satisfaction of the instinct is accompanied by an extraordinary high degree of narcissistic enjoyment, owing to its presenting the ego with a fulfillment of the latter's old wishes of omnipotence." So, in conclusion, the lust for death, as Freud understood, is not at first morbid. It is exciting and seductive. But let me put this in a simpler manner, possibly. Think of how many times you had embedded journalists going off to war, not to criticize, not to look at the conditions that were being created, not to examine the impact upon the civilians, the infrastructure, and the environment, polluting the soil and the water and the air with depleted uranium, polluting the bodies of the soldiers from America and our other countries' support with experimental vaccines, but rather there to be the ultimate cheerleaders for the war, for its new technology, the fact that they were embedded. We had over 800 embedded journalists, all pro-war, all pro-America at war, all pro the necessity of the war in Iraq. So what did we learn? We learned they were wrong. Those who put them in harm's way were wrong. The institutions that did not critique or double-check their facts were wrong. The pundits and talking heads on television were wrong. all the liberal radio broadcasters who supported these wars, not just in Iraq, but also in Syria and in Libya, were wrong. And in my personal opinion, should never again appear on any public forum, because their being wrong wasn't like taking a wrong turn and hitting a dead end and coming back, picking up margarine when someone asked for olive oil or butter, where there's no real consequence to being wrong. Millions of people have died. Hundreds of millions of people's environments has been permanently and forever in our lifetimes polluted. Millions of babies will be born with different types of defects due to our involvement. But I have yet to hear a single journalist, a single news network, a single politician come forward and say, I do not deserve your trust when I am this wrong with these consequences. To the contrary, right now, all those same people, from Ann Coulter to those on the left, are championing again the police state. When was the last time you heard any of the patriot groups, the constitutional groups, the pro-America groups marching in Washington to condemn the National Defense Authorization Act, the Patriot Act, spying on American citizens, where we, the people, become enemies of the state simply for our right to protest, or even if we've never protested anything in our life, we are still being examined, monitored, every one of our emails read, every phone call listened to, watched through the televisions we're watching, they're watching, listening to us. And yet there is no protest anywhere in the United States. What does that tell us about us? What does it tell us about them? I'm Gary Noll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
I couldn't sleep at all last night.
I'd like to welcome you all. I'm not live on WBAI today because that is the choice of the station manager. And whether I return to BAI at all will be based upon conversations this week, but I'm not optimistic. And that is their choice, and that is their right, and so we'll live with that and go forward from there. And I will wish them well on whatever programming they decide is in the best interest of the station. Clearly, it is not mine, nor yours. Now, we will be doing one last effort to do a retreat. My schedule does not, unfortunately, allow me to do any more retreats in the near future, because I'm going to be working on some very important projects over the next 2 years. But we're going to have a really good retreat coming up the first and second week of April. We were full as of yesterday. And then Luann told me that one person canceled from the first week and one canceled from the second. I do not have room for couples. I do not have room for families. We are full. I only have room for one person each week. That's it. And what happens at a retreat depends upon what a person desires to happen, the energy they bring, and the energy they're open to. We've had some remarkable things happen. I've seen some wonderful turnarounds in attitude, energy, especially good for people with depression or anxiety, people who are confused about life, people who are looking for some new directions, people who really want to commit themselves to their own health, mental and physical, that we are prepared to help you with. We have a wonderful crew, wonderful team put together. So here's what you do. First, listen to two people who are just at a retreat to get an idea of what they received out of 1 week, just 1 week they were there.
Hi, my name is Barbara. I'm 77. I just finished a week at a health retreat, and this is what I've experienced. It's been a pivotal point in my life. I come home much happier, wiser, and I will stick to my food plan, lose the 50 pounds that I need to lose, and continue to learn and love. One of the wonderful things I learned was an energy workshop where I walked out of there not afraid of death anymore.
My name is Steve Graham. I'm 61 years old. I just completed a week here at the health retreat. And 61 years is a lot of years of living. And these 5 days have been some of the most life-altering days that I've ever had in my life. I've basically just attained so much authentic information. And I think that that authenticity is half the battle, is knowing that the tools you're being given are real and valid and will truly work if you apply them in your life. It's a life-changing experience that I would encourage everybody to take part in. The change in your nutrition and your diet, the change in your way of perceiving the world that we live in, where you have the kind of clarity to make good decisions and live in your authentic self is possible through the type of teaching that you're going to get here. The staff was phenomenal. I felt that I don't know how other groups interact, but the groups here, the group that I was a part of, was so self-supportive. We were all looking to encourage one another, and we were all really questing for the same results. And it's just been a great experience. And now I know that all I have to do is take this energy back home with me and continue what's been started here. And I'm very appreciative of having this opportunity to experience this.
Those are just two of the individuals who attended. It's not like a vacation. It is not like going up to the Catskills for a weekend of yoga. It is not like going to a Buddhist monastery and in silence and eating some brown rice, drinking some apple juice and meditating. Both of those are very good, by the way. This is for those people who really want to change their life and need some help, need some direction. That's what we're there for. Counseling is free. My lectures every night. In fact, I do a lot of lectures during the daytime, little spontaneous lectures in the daytime. I'll give you an example. We were going out on a country road, an old country road with just a bucolic scene and the smells of nature, and people were talking. So I just turned around and I said, hold on a second. I said, we've only gone 100 feet. Now tell me, how many birds are singing to you? I don't know. I don't hear any birds. It's because you're not focused on being present and mindful in this moment. You were chatting. So you wouldn't have benefited from the walk. You wouldn't have benefited from nature. You'd have just gone out and done a walk. I said, so now, close your eyes, stand here for 1 minute, and listen. They did. Then I ask again, how many birds did you hear? Oh, you know, 10, 12? Yeah. They were there before, you just weren't tuned into them. So how we can tune into the things we need to tune into to lower our stress, expand our mind, and start the healing of our body, that's what this is about. The gourmet vegan foods, the homesteading class, the hydroponic class. You're actually going to see hydroponics growing, sprouting, mushrooms growing, things you could do at home, a yoga meditation, a butterfly house with gorgeous butterflies in it. You can go in and sit in an aromatic house with all kinds of lavender, lilac, honeysuckle. So this is not unlike any place else you could go in America. In fact, we have people from South Africa come, people from around the world come, because they've heard of what happens here. So if you'd like to join me, there's only room for one person the first week and one person the second week of April. Call Luann. She's the one that would screen you. 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008. I would like to take a few moments, and then I'm going to open up our lines for you to call in. I want to share some ideas with you that concern me. First up is our unemployment rate is a lie. Everything about it is a lie. I'll get to that in a few moments. Here's what's not a lie. The world is bankrupt. America is bankrupt. Everyone is bankrupt. Everywhere. And as countries, here's the latest. And this is from today. Every man, woman, and child on the planet would be billed $21,714 as part of their global debt. Of course, this is according to the International Monetary Fund. So now we have $152 trillion. Now, that's a very conservative figure. Other figures put it at close to $200 trillion. And they're not going to appropriate a percentage of debt. What it means is this debt will never be repaid. It can't be repaid. What it does mean is that the only way that we can function today is by people creating debt, creating an ever-increasing bubble. But the bubble is not a local bubble. It is now a world bubble because the interactions, interrelationships of all these banks that are giving all this money. For example, when you see a shopping mall, someone had to be able to buy the land. That's the developer. The developer had to be able to go to some consortium or some group and say, I'm going to open up a mall. It'll cost me $50 million, but we'll make it back in rents, et cetera. And people think, okay, well, as long as we get a return on our money, we'll back that. Now all these malls are closing. The standard stores are closing because people are buying over the internet. So a lot of the ways that we take in information, like listening over the radio, land-based stations, are losing audience. People are listening over the internet to what they used to listen to a land-based station. But still, the other one is not giving up. It's borrowing money to stay alive. Businesses are borrowing money. We tell people, focus upon the $20 trillion that the government owes. How much do individuals owe on just their mortgages? Well, we don't look at that. We should, because if we took into account all of our different loans, we'd be looking at $25 trillion from corporate borrowing. We'd be looking at over $12 trillion for mortgage debt, over $1 trillion for student debt, over $1 trillion for car debt, over $1 trillion for credit card debt. You have all these debts, states' debts, city debts. Everyone's borrowing what they don't have. In fact, here in the United States, more than $9 trillion was added to the national debt during Obama years. But where did the money go? Does it go to de-ghettoize whole communities, whole cities, like Detroit, by rejuvenating? No. If it did, then Detroit could once again be a vital city. There are pockets of vitality, but the rest of it is moribund. We have over 250 million Americans who are in debt so deeply that the only way they can function is to get some kind of money each week. They don't have $500. In fact, a lot of people who are going to court over completely insignificant fractions like being late on a payment are actually being arrested because they're being put into debtors' prisons. So we have debt and no one's talking about it. What could we need in order to change our infrastructure? Well, our infrastructure, which deeply needs correcting, according to the American Road and Transportation Builders Association, nearly 56,000 bridges in the United States are currently structurally deficient. And that's not so cool when you consider that bridges have about 185 million people a day traveling on them. And also, more than one out of every four bridges in the United States is more than 50 years old and has never had major reconstruction work on it. And America does not have a single airport that is considered in the world's top 25. And the average age of American dams is 52 years of age. And according to the American Society of Civil Engineers, American dams have a D grading. And overall, the American Society of Civil Engineers said the condition of America's infrastructure as a whole is still a D, not an a D. And congestion on our highways is costing us over $100 billion a year in wasted time and fuel. We don't have a high-powered train system. We should have had that long. China does. Japan does. Germany does. France does. We don't. We'd rather put it into armaments, the military-industrial complex, put it into the bank accounts of 400,000 Washington contractors. In effect, in order to completely fix all of our roads and bridges, just those two, you're looking at $800 billion. That's only a couple that of the things we could change. To repair all of our infrastructure in the United States, that means everything that is wrong, about $4.5 trillion. Seems like a lot of money, but think of all the people you could put to work. Think of how good it would be for the country. And as long as you didn't do it as a private-public partnership, because those are deadly. I'll give you an example one. After Katrina, I was down in New Orleans. I went everywhere in the city, but I was particularly interested in the lower Ninth Ward because it's low to the sea level. And down there, you just see the water line at about 8 to 9 feet, just house to house to house. That's how high up the water came. Rich or poor, didn't matter. That's, you all got flooded. And then you would see some blue tarpons, the kind you could go to a warehouse store and pick up for maybe $50 maximum, no more than $1 per square foot. And then you could take that over the place in the roof that had a hole and cover it up. The government allocated to one company that never put one of those up $175 a square foot. And then they, in turn, hired people to do the actual putting up at $2 a square foot. So contractors made all the money, subcontractors made a lot, and the actual person doing the work made very little. And nobody could put these up, and these were given free to the contractors. The actual tarpon that they were charging $175 a square foot were free. So that's how everyone exploits a disaster. Everybody finds a way of making money from it. So you don't want these same people coming in and doing anything to help us with our infrastructure, although it was exploited. And that's the only people Trump has surrounded himself with. Now, according to Stephen Ledman, the depression level unemployment in America is now. But we just heard that, wow, all these hundreds of thousands of jobs, isn't that so great? Our unemployment level is down to 4.7%. It's not true. The Bureau of Labor Statistics admits misreporting, saying, quote, the confidence level for the monthly change in total employment is on the order of plus or minus 430,000 jobs. Plus or minus 430,000? It's all a guess. It's all a guess. None of it is factual. The actual unemployment level in the United States is a minimum of 23% or as high as 28%, because you have 102 million working-age Americans without jobs. And the jobs we do have are junk jobs. Jobs do not pay a living wage. Jobs do not allow you to pay back the debt that you've accumulated. Jobs that cannot increase your quality of life. Minimum wage pays. So don't believe them when they say that our economy is doing great. It's all a bubble. Wall Street is a bubble. The commercial real estate market is a bubble. The student debt is a bubble. The credit cards is a bubble. We have nothing but bubbles, and they're all going to burst. And so what should you do? Get your money out of the six banks that are too big to fail. They have $278 trillion of exposure to derivatives. By the way, the very same people that caused the last economic crisis have created $278 trillion derivatives as a time bomb, and these could explode at any time. This is the biggest colossal bubble in history. It's not even being discussed, because most people don't know what a derivative is and don't realize that these gambles are from the too big to fail. J.P. Morgan Chase, Citibank, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, Morgan Stanley, and Wells Fargo. Those are the six banks that you should take your money out, because they're the ones, just those six, are holding $278 trillion. But when you add up all the assets that are actually in those six banks, combined, they have $9.8 trillion. So let me just see. They have on hand 9.8 trillion total. They could end up owing 278 trillion. 9 trillion to 278 trillion? Are you kidding me? In other words, these too big to banks fail have exposure to derivatives that is more than 2,800% greater than their total assets. 28 times. This is complete and utter insanity. And so what is a derivative? Well, they can be immensely complicated, but make it simple. According to Mike Snyder, on a very basic level, a derivative is not an investment in anything. When you buy a stock, you're purchasing an ownership interest in a company. When you buy a bond, you're purchasing the debt of a company. But a derivative is quite different. In essence, most derivatives are simply bets on what will or will not happen in the future. The big banks have transformed Wall Street into the biggest casino in history, and when things are running smoothly, they usually make a whole lot of money. But if it goes bad, if their bet goes bad, the American public is going to have to bail them out. You can thank Barack Obama for that, and of course the Clintons for creating this whole thing to begin with. So that's the reality. So what do I suggest? I suggest you take your money out of banks, put it into gold, silver, and treasury stocks, and get out of debt. Because I believe that within the next 24 months, based upon the failure of this presidency, that we're going to get hit with some massive corrections in the market. I hope I'm wrong, but that's what I see coming. So for those people who don't have debt and have ways of being self-supportive, you'll be the smart ones. And a whole lot of people are going to be very angry because they didn't pay attention. They didn't think it impacted them. They were the intentionally ignorant individuals. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on tomorrow's program. Have a nice day, everyone. Come on.
I like it like that.
Come on.
Come on, let me show you where it's at.
Come on.
Come on, let me show you where it's at.
I wanna show you.
Come on, let me show you where it's at.
The name of the place.
I like it like that.
Now the last time I was down there, I lost my shoes. They had some cat shouting the blues.